The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Just east of 75 on Causeway Boulevard is the beautiful Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon showroom. It's one of Ira's favorite places. Regular podcast listeners know that. Right now at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, the 2018 XT5, the beautiful crossover, $359 a month lease. Go to edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. That's edmorsecadillacbrandon.com for all the details. You'll see so many other fantastic offers right now at edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. We appreciate them presenting all of Ira's work, along with Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, who we're going to tell you about later. And here's Ira.
How do you like them apples? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Happy Thursday. The Ira Kaufman Podcast is on. We are live at One Buck Palace. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com, and the man of the hour is here, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, sitting alongside Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucks Fan. And Ira, it is the second half of the season. It is here. You look good in your Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon White. You look like, I don't know what you look like, but how are you?
I'm doing well. And Lee, you were there when I asked, I didn't ask, I said to Coach Mark Duffner that 2 years ago, Coach, this franchise was sitting at 3-5. I believe it was a bye week, but they were 3-5, same record. And lo and behold, I don't think I used those words, but it's what I meant. Lo and behold, they reeled off 5 straight wins. 5. And what was the common denominator? Strong defense and takeaways. So I said, can it happen again? Of course he said yes. So Lee, here we are. I think a loss to the Redskins will change a lot of things around here.
Mm-hmm.
A loss. And by that, I mean, I think I would go back to Winston. I know the Winston bashers don't want to hear it, but I would go back to Winston because I think at that point you're putting up the flag that we're not making the playoffs, season's over. And when that happens, it's Alex Kappa time and all the rest, and Winston comes back. So, Lee, what I'm saying is I'm not going to call it a crossroads game and a tipping point. We've already used up those expressions. I won't bother Buck fans with that. But what I will say is a lot would change if they don't win this game. A lot.
I think I talked about this last podcast. I got a piece of trivia. I brought up Steve Pazarkowitz last game.
Yes, you did.
And, you know, is that going to force the Glazers' hand if they do lose?
I spent 3 days trying to figure out how to spell his name, Lee. I think I might have it now.
There's a feature on your computer called copy and paste.
I never heard of it.
but here's the piece of trivia. Then I'll get you back to Duffner real quick. Steve Pazarkowitz only had 2 wins in his – you're a big win-loss guy when it comes to NFL quarterbacks. He only had 2 wins in his 3-year NFL career. His second start of his career was his first win, 1979 season. Second start
That's
of his
first
career.
First year I started covering pro football, Lee.
Take a guess who was on the other side of the line in scrimmage at quarterback.
Bill Sims.
A rookie making his first start of his career.
Oh, I thought it might be Phil Simms. He was a rookie in 79.
And this guy was a rookie quarterback making his first start against Steve Pazarkowitz.
Better not be Joe Montana.
It was Joe Montana.
Ooh.
And I linked to it in my story. There's video of it.
How about me getting that trivia question over there? Isbitz, don't I get something for that?
So,
maybe an Escalade? I get something?
That's the value of covering the NFL for 67 years.
All right, so now you're going to get back to Coach Duffner. What do you got for Duffner?
I was trying to figure out a delicate way of asking the following, because I don't want to insult Mark. Don't want to embarrass him. Like him. A lot of fans out there, they believe a press conference should be browbeating like the British Parliament when on Sunday nights when on C-SPAN.
We have too much class for that.
What I wanted to ask him, but I couldn't find a delicate way, is, you know, he started whining about turnovers. I thought Lovie Smith was up there. And I wanted to ask him, Mark, are you so fixated on turnovers because you know your defense can't stop an offense? That's what it sounds like to me, that they've come to the realization that if we can't get turnovers, we're screwed because there's no way we could stop anybody. That's what it sounded like.
The irony of ironies is during that 5-game winning streak that I alluded to that turned this team around in 2016.
The one you said when I brought it up, you called it the Mesozoic era? That's what you said?
Of course. Okay. Steve, I think the common denominator was takeaways. Takeaways. And Derek Brooks always tells me, you know, when we do the identity, Tampa 2, which we did this week, Brooks laid down some strong words about the Buck effort in Charlotte. Brooks always tells me about takeaways. They come in bunches. They're contagious. It's contagious. It was during the five-game winning streak that gave them an 8-5 record and in charge of their own destiny. I mean, that seems like eons ago. They were in charge of their own playoff destiny with 3 weeks left in the season. Now, it didn't pan out because they lost the next two games and then won the finale, so they finished at 9-7. But, Steve, and I said it to Duffner, one interception in eight games, really? Doesn't that make you sick, Lee? You heard me say that. Doesn't
there's a lot of things about this defense. It really makes me ill.
The one interception, to me, jumps out at me. What, one?
People think, and football coaches apparently think this, that you can bank on turnovers. No, you cannot. Lee, there are chances.
Lee, one interception,
Well, you know what? You know what helps get the interceptions? Quarterback pressure. Play fundamental defense. Get the freaking team off the field in three plays for a change. Make the freaking team punt for a freaking change.
Hey,
it's called fundamentals.
Steve, I got the Kemper wound up over
God
there.
God dang takeaways. I could roll dice and come up with the same freaking odds. I mean, it just drives me bananas. Tackle. Dude, tackle. Get guys on the ground.
Am I going to get more money in next week's check for pushing the Kemper's buttons? Isn't that worth something to this podcast, Steve?
And now you got me going, let's go on to defense. Right now, this defense is on pace for historic, horrible NFL 99-year record. We all know about scores. We all know about most points given up. That's one.
Most touchdowns.
Yeah, well.
I checked it.
Okay. I was going to go another. That is one. But my favorite is passing yards.
Passing yards.
It's not even close. They're on pace to get blown out by 500 yards. No team in NFL history has given up 5,000 yards passing in a season.
Lee, they might not be the only team that does that this year. There's some really bad, the Saints' pass defense stinks. It does. Now, I agree with you, though, in terms of points. You can't get around the points. And they're on pace to give up the most points ever.
With the points, with the touchdowns, with the passing yards. Folks, this is not hyperbole what I'm talking about.
Right.
This is worse than an expansion team. When Ira and I were younger, the big thing was Johnny Carson would always mock the Bucks because they were so awful.
Yes.
This is worse than that. This is worse than the Bucks defense. Now, granted, they had a Hall of Fame player in Leroy Salmon.
No wonder Sapp can't contain himself. No wonder
Sapp. Yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
No wonder Sapp's going on Twitter, Steve, and weighing in.
Think about this, people. You've got Pro Bowl players on every level. You got JPP, he's going to get double-digit sacks. Quan Alexander's been in a Pro Bowl. Or has he? Yeah, he's been in the Pro Bowl. Levante David's been in the Pro Bowl. Ben Grimes has been in the Pro Bowl. Justin Evans was drafted before Alvin Kamara. And we go back to light there again. But all these players, and you very likely might have the worst defense in 99 years. Worse than any expansion team. And so I wrote this morning. The Bucks are honestly better off. You pick one or two players. I say pick Curry and JPP, and the rest of them you cut. You, honest to God, you cut the rest of them. You're going to bring Quan back, okay. But you cut the rest of them, you'll probably be better.
And Steve.
That's just unfathomable how bad that is.
Steve, taking it to the nth degree of what Lee is saying, put Brian Anger in mothballs. Don't punt the football. Do not punt the football. I can just hear 10% of our listeners right now saying,
yay!
That's right, Ira.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Fourth and 12, go for it.
Well, you have to lose.
Fourth and 9, go for it.
All right, Ira, a couple of things there.
You haven't been writing anything down, Steve. I don't think you got anything.
I got plenty written down. Plenty written down, Ira. Today we promised our listeners we will be diving deep on Jason Light and his performance here at the halfway mark. So we got a lot of exciting stuff to talk about there. You know, that sort of was a mini, mini preview because Lee just said, hey, if you cut the whole defensive roster except for a couple of guys, you'll probably be better next year. That doesn't speak too well for the GM.
About personnel, yeah.
When it comes to personnel. But Lee really probably wasn't stretching it because that's how bad this defense really is right now.
Oh.
It can get better. You would think it would have to.
Have you guys, now look, there's a lot of stats, I understand that, and you can't get around the points. The points is
that's the killer, yeah.
But I asked for a copy of the NFL stats today because it's halfway through the year. I want to look at them. I looked at the red zone, and I'm not making this up. Opposing teams, 30 opportunities.
It's like 27 touchdowns?
27 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Unheard of. I mean, that's crazy. That's just crazy.
It's the green zone, not the red zone.
That's a 90% failure rate.
It's incredible. And you would think just, you would get lucky, you know. But it's the realm of the Bucks where you get
lucky with a holding call, a fumble,
a bad pass, ball hits a guy in the head or something.
Yeah, thank you, Jameis, against Dan Lanning. Yeah. This is just unfathomable how bad this defense.
And the offseason was, you know, push was to bump up the defense.
And meanwhile, the 49ers.
And by the way, the guys they got were doing well.
49ers put up 35 points the other night, and we'll see what they do this weekend. I think and an interesting game coming up. It's not – is it this week? Yeah, I think it's this week. Monday night is the Giants and the 49ers, which is – that's the Bucks' next two opponents.
Okay.
And, of course, this week is the Redskins. Ira, your podcast, interesting thing going on. You're still ranked on the Google Play, top charts nationwide. You fell out for about 4 hours, and you came back. But – for some reason, the last podcast did not publish on Google Play. Now, it happens automatically.
Is that your fault somehow?
No, it's not my fault. And that could have changed.
I'm looking for somebody to blame immediately? Mm-hmm.
That could have changed as of now, and it's possible they were doing some sort of update or something, but I double-checked, and so it's interesting. But you're still there, even though... That's off the strength of your Tuesday your previous podcast.
It didn't even post.
Not on Google Play. It went to all the other outlets. But hopefully, if anybody was looking, hopefully this one will show up there. But let us know if you don't see it. I check, but we want to get in touch with Google Play if it's some sort of ongoing.
And Steve, we're always asking for comments.
If it's an ongoing glitch, we'd like to know. But hopefully it'll be corrected automatically. Of course, you can find your podcast on iTunes and Podbean. And Sage, we've got a lot of deep stuff to get into on Jason Light, and we'll be right back to do that. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa General Manager Brian Danahy is giving you the season's best deals during the introduction reduction. The 2019s are here, so they're reducing them at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Get 2019 XT5s leased for only $369 a month at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or click edmorescadillactampa.com. The dealer has all the details. So much going on at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. And you know what? It's your last call to save at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa with those season's best deals. Lease 2018 Escalades, just $859 a month. So many offers at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. We're so pleased to present them to you, as we've been doing for years. And of course, everything that Ira does at JoeBucksFan.com is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. All right, Sage, as we promised last podcast and earlier, we are going to talk Jason Light today, the general manager, because it's the halfway point. That's a great spot to talk about the GM and dive into his performance and where he's been this year and where he's going. And, of course, he's on a hot seat like everybody else because that's the nature of this season. Everybody knows that. Bottom line is, Ira, what do you want the people to know about your assessment of Jason Light as he stands today? Possibly in the eyes of the Glazers, but mostly in the eyes of you.
Well, we got to call him the Bunker Man, first of all, because he's buried deep in the fallout shelter. He ain't talking to nobody. I can't remember the last time somebody quoted Jason Light other than the Bucks radio network, which he's obligated to do like a half an hour before kickoff. He'll talk this Sunday with the Redskins, but, you know, they're softball questions. They're organizational questions. I wish you would come on this podcast. We're still working on that, fans. But let's get back to the nitty-gritty on Jason Light. If you subscribe to the Bill Parcells theory, as a GM, you are what your record says you are. And right now, they are on pace to finish 6-10. And if they do, and Lee, you've heard me say this before, it's one of those incredible nuggets that you wish wasn't true, he would have the same exact record during his 5-year stint as Mark Rockstar Dominic. And I call him Mark 28-52 Dominic. You call him Rockstar. I like my way better. Is that somebody that Light wants to be compared to? Happens at the end of Mark Dominic's 5 years? He got canned.
But you know why, don't you?
Well, you can come up with any reason you have.
Lovey didn't want anything to do with him.
All right. Well, if he was more successful, the Glazers would have went to bat for him also.
Yeah, true.
Close to home. They're not getting much out of this draft class. I'm not ready to pronounce judgment on it. I do think you got to give it 2 or 3 years. But, look, he started off with a bang. Mike Evans was the first guy he ever drafted, arguably the best player on this Buck team. I don't think I'm going to get too many arguments about him. Didn't play well Sunday, but, you know, on pace for having a heck of a season and has had a very good career. Not getting much out of his draft picks. 2016 draft looks like a disaster, an absolute disaster. And seeing James Bradbury, you know, bury Evans the other day only brings it up even worse that by the time Bradbury was drafted, Aguayo, Noah Spence, and Vernon Hargraves were all on the Bucks, and Bradbury was still on the board. It's tough to make a strong case, Steve. I think there's one way out. There's one way out, and I mentioned it in my Wednesday column, Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians looms over this picture a little bit. Now, first, that means the Bucs season ends in shambles and Cutter is replaced. I still think there's time for Cutter to save his job, but it's got to start Sunday, and it's got to start with a three-game winning streak.
Yes.
You got to win these three games. Boom, boom, boom. Because then Carolina's coming back to town, and the schedule Saints, in the fourth quarter gets Falcons, tougher. Yeah. So, but there is time. All right, let's assume there's regime change, and that means Dirk Cutter. Arians and Leiter tight.
Yes.
Arians is a Winston guy. The whole thing could come in together in some kind of crazy combination if the Glazers are on board with this. That could save Leiter's job right there. You know, I talked to Arians at the NFL meetings in 2016, talked to him by myself, and asked him about Jason Light, and he worked with him in Arizona. He couldn't stop talking about Jason Light. He said, this. Mm. He's going to be a great GM for Dirk Cutter. Of course, those words are ringing a little hollow right now. So I'll turn this thing over to DeCamper right now, but I don't think Light has a compelling case to make for the Glazers as we stand here right now. It's not compelling. And I'll tell you one more thing, Lee, and I never get off this thing, and I'm not getting off it. Two big offseason priorities, according to his own coach. More explosive plays, check mark. More physical, get after the quarterback, no check mark. And
well,
no check mark. I'm not comparing it to the 2017 Bucks. That was a historically bad pass rush. Now, come on, DeCamper.
No.
I'm not even giving you a foothold in this conversation.
No, you said that, I mean, unless I heard you wrong, which is very possible. You said one of the things Light had to do, you know, a check mark, was to improve the pass rush. Well, he went and got JPP for a third-round pick who's going to have double-digit sacks.
He got five new defensive linemen. Now, you know, Unrein hasn't played. Okay.
I'm not saying he did.
But the defense is historically bad with your big offseason push. I don't see too much out of the ex-Eagles. I don't see much out of Vita Vea. I don't. Jason Pierre-Paul, excellent move. Can't argue with that. Yeah. Secondary's in shambles. Guys, some injuries have exposed a lack of depth, as we always talk about on this team. And I think it's hard to make a strong case right now, Lee. You like the guy. I like the guy. But the record doesn't command much of a leeway.
I agree with you. I like Jason, but even he, I think, would admit that things have not gone the way he thought they would. I think Very Encouraged has been a good move. Better than Will Golston. If you put a gun to my head and ask me who the two best defensive players are right now, JPP and Curry. I really believe that. I honestly believe that.
And if they move on from Winston, and I don't
that's
think
bad
that,
for him.
And I don't think that's a done deal, but if they do, that doesn't reflect well.
That might be the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back. That might be it, because I don't know of a general manager that missed on a number one overall quarterback and survived. Yes, it's damning, but that also puts your franchise back for years. So
And Steve, he's already survived one coaching change, Lee. One.
Yeah.
Can you survive two?
Well, he didn't pick the first guy. Generally, owners give general managers two coaching hires. Now, what we don't know is what's being said behind the scenes. And I was talking with someone in the Bucks press corps in the locker room today. In a sick way, this is like soap opera fun. In a sick way. Who's stabbing who in the back? We don't know that. For example, you know, Light would have meetings with Team Glazer, and it's very, very likely he's like, hey, man, I did not invite Mike Smith back. I suggested Mike Smith should be replaced. That's not my call, because Cutter's contract says he gets to pick his coaches. Now, I don't know if that's in his contract or not. Usually it is for head coaches, so I'm making a big assumption there. So we don't know what's going on behind the scenes in the meetings with Glazers. We both know, or I think it's safe to assume, that Cutter has met with the Glazers, that Light has met with the Glazers separately and probably multiple times. So we don't know what's being said behind the scenes.
I think, Lee, I think you'd agree with me. The fact that Light has a contract for 2019 is not going to play any role whether this guy it continues with the Bucks.
Not at all.
The Blazers, that's not a big factor with the Blazers.
No.
We've seen that time and again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's not looking good for Jason. If you look at just the draft picks, forget the free agents. Just look at the draft picks. Okay, you got Mike Evans. That was a home run. And what happened after that? You got nothing. The 2016 draft right now, we thought it was a home run. Now we don't know. Quan Alexander's hurt. Jameis is a question mark.
2015.
Yeah, Jameis is a question mark.
Marpet got paid.
Got paid, but is he playing well? He's not playing. I'm not saying he's playing bad. I don't think he's playing.
And then you got Donovan Smith.
It was another question mark. And obviously the kicker draft with Aguayo. You're trading up to get Aguayo. He's gone. Hargraves has been a non-factor. Noah Spence is a ghost.
Spence can't get on the field.
Yeah, I mean, it's just by his drafts, year and a half, 2 years ago, that looked like his strong point. Now you can't argue that. So the only thing I can think of that saves Jason's job, and I hope he's back because I really love the guy. Great guy. I got a question about this, just general questions. He's always very helpful with me. I sure hope he doesn't go anywhere. But you know what? You got to win, and you got to be able to draft well. And this team, when you have the worst defense in NFL history, they're on pace for that in multiple categories, not just points. That defense is, and he built that defense.
Steve, can you articulate the flip side? Can you make a strong case for Jason Light? Can you?
Can I make a strong case for Jason Light? No, of course not. Come on, I'm not a miracle worker here. It's a tough case. You could find some wiggle room. I think I might have a couple of angles here, but I did some homework. I came to the party
nicely
doing my
done,
homework.
Steven. Nicely done.
It's all typed up and everything, old school. Now, I think what's important if you're going to evaluate Jason Light, and specifically his drafts, is to look at how has he fared against his division opponents.
Mm.
Because you play in the division. That's who you're measured against. The Glazers know to get to the Super Bowl, you really need to win your division and be the champ and be
so
the best.
So this is his fifth year. Okay.
So let's go to 2016. I'll just sprint some names down for you. You guys just explained how the Bucks had a horrible draft in 2016. Can't dispute that. The Falcons drafted Keanu Neal, Deion Jones, Austin Hooper, Devondre Campbell, who's the starting linebacker. Those are four guys that led them to the Super Bowl. And we know how good Neal and Jones have been, and Hooper's caught a lot of balls. The Saints that same year, they drafted Sheldon Rankins, who has four sacks this season,
finally healthy.
Good player. Michael Thomas in the second round.
Superb.
Who is going to end up with more than 300 catches in his first 3 years. Extraordinary. And the Bucs needed a receiver back in 2016 desperately, and they got him in the second round. Von Bell, versatile starter, 4.5 sacks last year in the secondary. They had an undrafted guy that year who started 13 times, a undrafted rookie corner, and he proceeded to Ken Crawley, 17 passes defensed, and he's still with the team.
I get nervous when Izbitz does reporting like this. Over
I get nervous whenever he writes something.
Now, the Panthers, that 2016 year, all they really ended up out of that draft was Bradbury, their first-round pick. Vernon Butler, defensive tackle, hasn't done much. He had a couple of plays against the Bucs the other day, but not much. So, you know, the Falcons and Saints had much better drafts. The Bucs are last. The Panthers maybe a hair.
But you're picking on Light's worst draft class.
Well, okay, yeah. Then we go to 2017, Ira.
All right.
The Falcons ended up with a fifth-round starting safety who has four picks already this year. Demonte Kazee, however you pronounce his name. And Takaris McKinley, their first-round pick last year, already has 5.5 sacks, a defensive end. He had 6 sacks as a rookie. You know, they like him. He's a guy
getting
on
better.
The rise. Decent draft. That's all they ended up with out of that pick. The Saints, though, 2017, Lattimore, Ryan Ramczyk, Marcus Williams, the safety. Oh, then they picked Alvin Kamara. They got four good
That's
players.
That's a historic draft.
Historic draft that got them very far. And the Panthers last year took McCaffrey. He's been a hit. He's the focus of their whole offense.
Absolutely.
Outside of Newton. Samuels, who's coming on, the receiver. Always forget his first name.
Curtis Samuels.
And the last guy is that they have a starting tackle, Taylor Moton, who they got in round two. So they've got three starters, and the Bucs had a good draft last year. But if you rank that draft in the division, Bucs were probably, you might want to say that they're third. Close to the Panthers, but third, because they got O.J. Howard, but outside of that, you can't make a super strong case for Justin Evans at this point.
Right.
So 2016, he had the worst draft class. He came in third last year in the division. And this year, the Bucs aren't doing anything. The Falcons have Ridley, Ito Smith, their running back. Munkin's guy has four touchdowns. The Saints, Marcus Davenport, has four sacks already and a forced fumble as a rotational defensive end. And the Saints, who are loaded, cut a lot of their other picks. And the Panthers have DJ Moore and Dante Jackson, who's got four picks, the cornerback who they should have taken.
What research from Mr. Isbitt?
So
that's outstanding.
You're looking at he hasn't had a top two draft in the division in the last 3 years, and I think that's going to hurt him with the guys upstairs because they want to build through the draft. You've talked to them enough where that's their focus, and like, you know, we're struggling.
The only flip side pro, Jason, is he did build the league's best passing offense. That's his, all his, except for one small cog, quarterback. And, you know, no one's a bigger Jameis guy outside of Pat Donovan than I am, but nobody knows who are not working for the Bucs knows what Jameis's future is. Nobody.
Yeah, it's, you know, Light always says, Ira, we've all heard him say it a bunch of times, and it's not, he said it publicly, you fell in the draft from the neck up. And a lot of these guys have failed in the neck up. Yeah. It's always Light's focus is in the neck up. And you could,
they don't have the want to.
You
Steve.
Could flat out say, it's not always want to, but whatever it is, hey, Jameis has failed from the neck up. That's what's failed him is the neck up. And that doesn't look good for Light when he pitches himself as a neck up kind of guy. It's a tough road for him. I think there's a couple of things, though. The passing offense Lee talked about. If it goes all the way through the season and the Bucs end up with the number five offense.
And the Glazers are excited about that.
And the Glazers are excited. If it sustains, you know, we've seen what we've seen. If it sustains, well, that can give Light a shot. If the offense sustains and Peyton Barber at least comes on and looks pretty good.
Could you make the same argument that it looks good on Cutter if it sustains?
I said how I feel about Cutter. Cutter's failure is the defense. I don't think they're going to all of a sudden tell Cutter, hey, you can't pick the defensive staff. We're going to pick it for you. And it's just so messy.
But I don't see how Light gets out of the defensive deficiencies either. He's the architect.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to take the fall.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. But one thing we don't know is, like Lee said, Mike Smith. Did Jason say, look, you have to get rid of him? And they didn't do it. Now, we know that there's something weird about Jay Hayes. Jay Hayes, they decided to bring him back. Cutter's old friend. They paid him. They paid him for this year, and then they fired him. And something weird happened there, and it sounds like Light forced his guy in and said, we got to get Branson Buckner. Enough of this crap. Mike Smith, I told you to get rid of him. We got to get Buckner in here. And somebody listened.
But the decision to bring Jay Hayes back was clearly Dirk Cutter's.
Right. So I'm guessing
we assume
all that, but maybe the Glazers, hey, you know, Light is the one who told us get rid of Mike Smith and Buckner. And so I think defensively you have to see how it plays out. But
Buckner hasn't put his stamp on this defensive
not
line
yet.
Yet either.
Not yet.
Not yet. But like I said, you know, I don't think anybody expected JPP to blow up like he has. I think Curry's done okay. Maybe good. So,
but Lee, it starts up front. You got the worst defense in the league. Starts up front.
Once again, two guys they brought in, two guys up front are getting the job. Not the entire line, but two guys are. Two guys that Light brought in. So, I mean, I can't say Buckner's doing garbage when your two best players on defense are unquestionably.
Steve, I'm not buying DeKemper's argument on Vinnie Curry. I'm not buying that one. I don't get enough out of Vinnie Curry.
I like Vinnie Curry. I don't think he's done a bad job. I'm sort of lukewarm on him. You know,
I'm not confusing him with Simeon Rice here. Don't get me wrong.
I'd give him a B minus so far if I had to throw a grade on him.
And he's missed a couple games because of injury too.
So B minus on an F defense. Yeah, you know.
That's what
yeah.
I'd give him. But the Bucs, I looked it up while you guys were talking. The Bucs right now are 26th in the NFL in sacks. 26th. That's no good. No. That is no good. I don't care if it's one guy's got eight or whatever. That's no good whatsoever.
Well, how many sacks do they have?
18.
And Cutter said we can't have 22 sacks. Well, they might have 21.
Well, no, they're halfway through the year. But, I mean, you know, and you got the completion percentage, which is ridiculous.
Well, everything else is ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous.
I don't know.
About the record? What about the overall team record? I mean, doesn't that go to Jason Light?
Well, it kills him.
At some point?
Well, yes and no. Can
he blame it all on bad coaching?
Well,
could he?
But ultimately, he doesn't coach. So if the Glazers really believe in their heart and souls, if they believe in their guts that, man, we had the talent this year, the coaching just imploded, maybe that helps Light. And maybe that's like, you know, we can't.
That's his only way out, Lee, is that they undercoached.
That's his best way out, if you call it the best. Yeah.
Right. So if the Glazers really believe that, man, we assembled the talent and this thing fell apart. It's not, can't blame it on Jason.
And the coaching staff's on Cutter.
I don't know if they really believe that, though. I don't know if they really believe that. And you could argue that last year's free agent crop, you could argue this, and this will tie into, you know, other things. You could argue that Chris Baker and DeSean Jackson were the worst two pickups by this team, period, by in the light regime.
I'm going to back up Steve on one of those players. I know and I'm confident that quite a few people are driving to work listening to this podcast, and they heard Steve say DeSean Jackson, one of the worst pickups. They probably ran through the red light. I agree with Steve. I will go on record as saying DeSean Jackson has poisoned his locker room. For the limited amount of success they got from him,
I thought he kept his mouth shut last year. Didn't he
kept
his mouth shut
with us? Didn't mean he kept his mouth shut in the locker room. How many? You heard it, how it seeped? Is that the right verb? Seeped out, I think, is the right verb. That he was trying to show leadership. Jameis hasn't been the same. You know, people always complain about Jameis. I almost used a foul word there. People complain about, oh, Jameis can't hit Jackson. Jameis has never been the same since they brought Jackson in here. I don't know what happened. I'm more inclined to believe something went wrong during the 3 weeks that he was suspended.
But you want to blame George Whitfield.
but think about it. This locker room is poison. We know that a lot of guys have looked at DeSean Jackson sort of as a Pied Piper. Young players, too. And the more I think about it, I'm not trying to get off the Jason Light conversation here, but the more I think about it, the more I read code words or hear code words like effort, which to me, and we'll talk about that later, I hear effort.
Some Jameis fans don't think that Jackson plays hard when Jameis is under center.
I can't go for it.
We've heard that.
Here's what I'll say about that. Jackson doesn't adjust the ball in the air very well. Whether that's voluntary or involuntary, I don't know. I can't read what the guy's heart says on the middle of the field unless it's really obvious. I'm going to back up Steve on that, DeSean Jackson. Swaggy
Baker,
that's
a strong statement, Steve.
But DeSean Jackson, I don't – the few positives they got out of him, I don't know if it outweighs all the negatives.
And here's another crazy part of that free agent pickup of 2017. If Chris Baker – and this is a hell of, this is a big, as the biggest if you can ever come up with. If Chris Baker was a player, they don't draft Vita Vea. And they might draft Derwin James, who looks like a stud.
That's a big if.
Oh, I'm going to do you one better.
How do you like them apples?
I'm going to do you
one better. If Baker's any good, they don't draft Vita Vea.
That's a huge big if.
And that's true. I'm going back to DeSean Jackson, I don't look at anything of the locker room stuff or the attitude stuff. I don't discount it. I don't believe it. I'm just sort of.
You want production.
I don't know. But and it's not even the production, Ira. I just look at it as this. If you've got a guy that you sign as your big money, $11 million a year free agent, and a little bit over a year later he wants out, you failed.
Yeah.
You failed if that guy wants to leave. Because that's a wanting to leave a team, that's a cancer. I'm sorry. And then you want the ball, and you want to leave.
I think the Bucks were 3-3 when that story came out. I mean, they weren't buried.
Yeah, that's a disaster. That means you failed on the neck up from DeSean Jackson if he wants to get out, and you can't do that. The Baker thing, I'll throw this at you. You know who's played very well since leaving the Bucks, and who has produced
I don't know if I want to hear this.
Produced one. Way more than Bo Allen and Chris Baker.
Wait a minute.
And he had 2 sacks on Sunday is Akeem Spence.
I knew that guy was coming up.
I thought I was going to say
he basically tried to replace Akeem Spence, first with Baker, then with Allen. And they
Because he's undersized.
Drafted Vea.
He's undersized.
And the guy's a decent player. You could have gotten away with Akeem Spence, who's played on some decent teams since he left.
Interestingly, Light's good friend and fellow Belichick disciple, Quinn, up in Detroit, got rid of him too.
Bob Quinn. Steve, you've done some outstanding research. You should be proud of yourself.
I don't know about that, Ira.
All right, so look, we're not going to close the book on Jason Light. There's 8 more games left. Let's see what happens. But I think we're all in agreement. As we stand here this week, midpoint of the season, it's difficult to make a compelling case for Jason Light. A
couple of questions for you, Ira. Do you think Mariota having a little bit of a comeback out on Monday Night Football, you know, a couple of touchdowns, running for one, looking like a leader. Glazers are paying attention. They love football. They're watching. You think that hurts a little?
I think it hurts a little. Now, Mariota's biggest problem has been staying healthy. And
one of them.
He's been hurt a lot more than Winston has. You know, Winston had the shoulder. This guy's had several. Mariota played well the other night. They made the playoffs last year. He wasn't great, but they made the playoffs. He was also the quarterback in Kansas City road playoff game.
Made that freak play.
And helped them come back from a 21-3 deficit. Now, they ran the ball down the Chiefs' throats, but he made some plays. He had that fluke play. Yeah, you know, deflection back to him for a touchdown. Yeah. But he was the quarterback, and they're down 21-3 on the road in the first playoff game the guy ever played in. You got to give him some props. He's not great.
No.
But I think the theory is you can win with him. You can win with him. Maybe he's an Alex Smith. Maybe he's better than Alex Smith. Or he will be. Maybe. Winston, the jury's all the way out on. You don't know. You don't know if you even want this guy around. I don't think the Titans are thinking about moving on from Mariota. Steve, I think that's a big difference.
Well, I think they would have if he threw a clunker up the other. That was a big game for him, period. And now the team's righted the ship at 4-4 and all that stuff in a weak division. And
They don't have a lot of weapons, Tennessee. They're a beat-you-up team. They run the ball, play good defense. They're very different than the Bucs.
Yeah, they don't even run. You're right. But
they got two great, very good offensive tackles that are young. They've drafted them. I think Conklin and Lawan.
Yeah, they got some talent. They drafted receivers. And I got a name for you, though, Ira, as we'll transition away from Jason Light. Anybody have anything else they want to say about Jason and his job?
I want to warn him that the three of us are going to be tracking him down Sunday when he gets out of that announcer's booth. He's going to turn around. He's going to have a cup of coffee in his hand, and he's going to see the three of us. He might spill his coffee right over on us.
But I think there's some if they let Light run the season, there's a lot they could play in his favor. I mean, a lot could swing in his favor. Ronald Jones could finally get a shot and light it up, and other things can happen. And
the biggest thing is they can go on a 3-game winning streak. That's the biggest thing.
Well, we'll see if that happens. I wanted to throw a name at you, Ira, before we get to our predictions.
You already threw Akeem Spence.
I love throwing Akeem Spence out there. Now, let me throw Mike Mularkey out there for you. You know, he 9-7, went to the playoffs last year, won a playoff game, respected guy around the league.
And as a result, got fired.
He had they had some disagreements there, and they wanted him to make changes. He said, I'm not doing it, and then they fired him. Anyway, Mularkey, here's what I want to throw at you. Dirk Cutter has always said in previous years that when he studies film, he goes and watches Tennessee, because Mike Mularkey's offense is really just like his in all its elements, and Cutter took over from Mularkey in Atlanta, and they kept a lot of the same elements, and he made some changes, and he liked a lot of what Mike did. And it's a very similar offense. He's said that many, many times. He watches film of Mularkey teams against common opponents so he can see how they handle stuff. So if this offense is humming and Mularkey's out there and they know that that could be a smooth transition offensively, if Jameis, let's say, comes on later in the year and maybe they want to sort of keep things a little bit intact with a brand new voice but keep the theme of the offense, you think the Bucs would go with a retread like Mularkey?
As a head coach?
Yeah.
I think that's Mularkey. It's absolute malarkey. There's a reason he got thrown out of Tennessee. There might be some things behind the scenes. John Robinson, ultimately made the decision. Ironically, a Jason Light disciple. I think Light's his mentor. He even says that publicly. So, no, I think they can do better with Mularkey. Heck, I would keep Todd Monken around over Mularkey. He's got a relationship and a damn good one with the offensive personnel on this football team. So I say that's malarkey. Stick with Akeem Spence. You had me there. You had me at Akeem Spence.
All right, Ira. I have a feeling we are going to talk a lot more about Jason Light in the coming days as this all shakes out before our eyes. Which talent thrives, which falls back, and what this team does. Because, the wins and losses will matter ultimately if it really swings one way or the other, right? But if it's sort of fuzzy and gray in the middle, there'll be a lot of decisions to make or a lot of angles to take for Team Glazer. Now, you guys, we're in the locker room today. Sage, you're out there sniffing around doing your thing. What do you want to tell the people about the Wednesday Buccaneers locker room?
Oh, my takeaway is I can't find Brent Grimes. Yeah, and I put it in a request for him.
A written request.
I did. I put it in a verbal request. Can't find him. I was there.
They can't find him or you can't find him?
I can't find him.
Okay, I thought you said they couldn't find him.
About
that'd
half,
be a story.
Halfway through the session. And by the way, the whole DBs as a group, I don't see them on Wednesdays. I just don't see them. Carlton Davis, I don't see them.
They're all hiding.
And so anyway, but Grimes is the guy.
You ought to hide on Sundays.
I want to ask Grimes why this team has one interception. I mean, this guy's got 10 years of experience to talk about.
You should ask Miko. She'll talk.
And so he didn't come before we got kicked out today. I'll try again. I'll try again with Grimes. Now, Lee, you were there for a little Mike Evans action, and I guess Mike Evans didn't alibi that he didn't play particularly well in Charlotte, and gave credit to the DB that was shadowing him.
Yeah, Mike's a stand-up guy. You know, I know some people don't like him because of the flag thing. Well, you know, that's not football in my eyes. I'm not saying I agree with him, but Mike's a stand-up guy. He's always treated me good, always treats us good. You ask him a question, you'll get an honest answer. Jenna was really peppering him about, you know, why did you play so lousy? I guess you can get away with it, you know. But anyway,
well, she asked because Cutter mentioned it. Cutter seemed to go out of his way to mention it. I think part of that is because he thinks he knows that Mike Evans can handle constructive criticism.
Yeah, there you go. And Mike was very matter of fact. He goes, "Look, I didn't have a bad game. I played against him 3 or 4 times. I usually have success against him, but he played great Sunday." And he was given, instead of him making some kind of weird excuse, Mars behind the moon or whatever, you know, he came out. Bradbury had a hell of a game.
He did. He did.
So, you know, Mike's, I like Mike. He's one of my favorite players because he's almost to a fault honest. I like that.
Now, I was on the phone when the locker room opened. I had a choice. Go to the locker room, but I knew DeKemper was going in there. Or talk to Jake Gruden.
Someone to stay away.
And Jake Gruden was on a conference call at noon. And there were only two of us asking questions. I almost had a private conversation with the guy. It lasted about 10 minutes.
What, you and Brooke?
The Buck representative that was handling the call.
Brooke?
And when it was over, she said this was the longest call of the year with an opposing coach. I felt proud about that. I asked him about his brother and what's going on out in Oakland. You know what he said? He goes, I go, your brother's getting hammered. The national media is killing him. He goes, what else is new? What else is new with the Gruden family? We get chopped up in the media. I mean, it was funny the way he said it. But, of course, he supports John and thinks things are going to work out in Oakland. I asked him about Winston. He's a Winston guy.
Really?
He's a Winston guy. He thinks the guy has a lot of talent. He's seen young quarterbacks. All of a sudden, things click at a certain point. You never know when that's going to happen or if it's going to happen.
Well, you know what?
But he's not down on Jameis Winston.
You know, it's interesting he would say that. Now, we both know who his brother is.
And he worked with Robert Griffin. Remember, he had the ups and downs with Griffin, I think. Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is I know someone that's tight with Gruden. And this
another unnamed source, DeKemper.
Well, I could say his name, and he'll never talk to me again. So
I'm
sorry.
Continue.
And this guy gives me a lot of good information, so I'm not going to blow a good source. Well, anyway, this guy's tight with Gruden. He's tight enough that one time he said, "Look, here, I'll text him." And about 2 minutes later, he got a text back from Chucky. So, and he told me the things that Chucky used to say about Jameis on the air, specifically at the draft where he didn't like him. This guy told me, he goes, "What Gruden says on the air and what Gruden says in private are two different things."
I agree.
And he was telling me that Chucky's a big Jameis fan.
Now, guys, I am partial to Jay Gruden because, and Steve knows the story, he's the guy.
Speaking of unloading on sources.
No, I mean, it's a year, you know, a couple of years later, I might as well say what happened.
Told that
he's the guy who said, you know, Baker's a good player and doesn't like to practice. You know what? He was half right. He doesn't like to practice. Is he out of football, Steve? Is he out of football?
Yeah, he's out of football.
Out of football.
Yeah, he had
the
a shot.
The guy's not 35 years old, Steve.
Marvin Lewis gave him a shot, and he got cut.
Out of football.
Yeah, cut like 2 days later, didn't he?
No, he was there for like a good 5 weeks, I think.
Oh, okay.
Now, Lee,
you're going to say 5 hours.
What'd you grasp out of Deshaun Jackson? Did he deny that he requested a trade?
Not at all. He said, "Well, my conversation with Jason Leiter, confident." He didn't say that. I'm paraphrasing. I think he said they're between us, which is, you know, confidential.
If the report was false, Steve, wouldn't he have said so?
Well, of course, and so would have Jason and everybody else. But if they're confidential, right? If his chatter with Light is confidential, then who told Ian Rappaport? Because it makes Jason Light look bad.
Jason Light wasn't the guy that told Ian Rappaport.
Exactly.
Yeah, we can bet on that.
We can bet on that.
So, you know, it's messy. And, you know, we talked about Jackson and as it relates to Light's tenure. So, you know, the fans can make their determination. But I will say this about Jackson. You know, the good teams, Ira, you've been around good teams and a lot of good teams. They have some unhappy players. Yeah. They have
it's called the team. Not everybody's on the same team.
But they also have leaders in the locker room.
They have guys with issues. They have angry guys. They've got happy guys. They got all kinds of guys.
Happy with the contract. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Bucks have an issue with leadership, and it's apparent, right?
It is apparent.
It's apparent. And one thing I wanted to bring up, but before we talk about Warren Sapp and how that went down this week on social media, Gerald McCoy Monday, he talked to the media, Ira. He was here and chatted it up. And one thing he mentioned, and I wrote about this, he said that he's going to have a dinner with the entire defense. They're going to go out to dinner this week and talk, and that they need to talk, and they haven't done that yet this year, and they're going to go out to dinner as a group, and that's...
Now, why aren't we invited to that Golden Corral dinner over there, Lee? Why?
So, it was a little bit odd, one, because, well, if it's that important and you need to talk, then wouldn't you do this, like, at the bye week, right after you got your doors blown off in Chicago? Or after you let up 40 points all on the defense in New Orleans, now we need a dinner to chit-chat and try to get closer to get odd stuff. And I think it illustrated a general leadership problem on the team. I don't blame McCoy for saying, hey, let's have dinner and talk about it. Some fans might interpret it that way, but the whole part of it is odd.
You know, I never thought I'd say this, but they miss Robert Ayers' intangibles. Not Robert Ayers the player necessarily, because, you know, the Bucks didn't get the best out of Robert Ayers. He didn't play
I heard one reason.
As he did with the Giants, which was the reason the Bucks wanted him. He had that big season with the Giants.
I had heard
But he brought something to the table in the locker room a little bit.
Initially, he did. I heard one of the reasons he left, aside from his play. That was a big thing. But evidently, he was a me first. It was not a good locker room issue.
But a lot of guys said he was partly responsible for the turnaround in 2016.
I think he was great for the team in 2016. 2017, it appears like he just mailed it in.
Yeah. Exactly.
And probably the biggest red flag on Ayers, knowing how Ayers was in 2016, when they signed Swaggy, and Ayers was like, oh, yeah, he's a friend of mine. We were rookies in Denver together, and Ayers was all good with Swaggy. It was like, well, these guys should be polar opposites here. And you know, and
that was a tip-off right there.
Maybe Baker helped pull his old friend into his ways. I don't know. But those guys are out of the league, so that says a lot for the Bucks.
Here's the thing about this dinner. Why are you waiting until you're hungry? Shouldn't you be hungry at One Buck Place and you SOBs? Forget waiting 5, 6, 8 weeks. Why wait for a freaking dinner? What's the old saying? Nip it in the bud. Do it here at One Buck Place. What are you waiting for? You can't talk things over unless you have grub in front of your face. No sense of urgency. No care. No nothing. I'm going to go off on the Steve Finskin. We'll get the sap right now. For people who don't know, Warren Sapp.
When you said you can't talk without food in front of your face, I was like, yeah, he's not. He's nodding. Absolutely.
I got a vision of a beet salad.
I was like, I don't talk without food. What is it? Go ahead, Liz.
Well, with Sapp. Sapp went on Instagram and diagrammed a play that the Bucks defense made, or shall I say didn't make, against Christian McCaffrey, where he went outside and ran for, I don't know, 12 yards, 20 yards, whatever. And Sapp was just saying, you got to be kidding me. Come on. He kept saying, come on, because it was so obvious. And Sapp, which I've been told since I started playing football in grade school, you contain inside. That's like You walk and dribble at the same time. You stop and keep dribbling, double dribble. It's something just elementary as can be. You contain inside by the defense. And Sapp was explaining how these guys were pushing McCaffrey outside. And, well, apparently Lavonte David and Quan Alexander didn't like that. And they replied in the comments of that post that basically Sapp didn't know what he was talking about. Quan used MF. You people can know what that acronym is.
Why do you want to take on a guy that's wearing a gold jacket? Why do you want to do that? I mean, he's a Tampa icon. He's a big representative of the golden days. Just accept it. Just move on. Move on.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it when I mentioned it to you in the media workroom. Like, those guys can't win that argument because he's a gold jacket, et cetera, et cetera. And I didn't know this. I was just told this because I didn't look at all the comments. Apparently, Fred Taylor, the former Gators running back
good
for the
running
Jaguars.
Back.
Very good. He also replied in that thread, agreeing with Sapp. Now, here's why I didn't touch this. Everything I've ever was taught about football, defensively you contain inside. That makes all the sense in the world. Because why? There's tacklers inside. There aren't tacklers outside, generally. But there are tacklers inside. So, last year I'm reading Wade Phelps' book. Wade Phillips, the defensive coordinator of the Rams. He's thought to be one of the best defensive coordinators this game has ever seen. I swear on a stack of Bibles, I read an excerpt in that book where he said contain outside. I almost fell off my couch. I'm like, wait a minute, I've never heard it before. That goes against everything I've ever heard. So to be fair, I don't know if the Bucs defense on that particular play Sapp was highlighting, if they had some kind of special play where they like push it outside and do the old John Wooden rule, push to the out of bounds line because that's an extra defender. I don't know that. So I got to be fair and got to be honest. I don't know if that was a special play. And then Levante, I think, was in the comments said he doesn't know what he's talking about. I got to be fair. But like you said, why are you guys going after Sapp? Okay, let's use the premise he's wrong. Why do you guys care? You guys are on potentially the worst defense in the history of the NFL. You're worried about what Sapp says?
Steve,
you're worried about what you're doing.
Steve, I got a story. It just reminded me when Lee was talking about this. In 02, when the Bucs had that fantastic defense and ended up with the 9 defensive touchdowns that Gruden challenged them to get, led by Derek Brooks for the defense player of the year. I swear, I might have the year wrong, but they were beating up on the Vikings. I think this is the game where I tell that great story about Gruden with Allstott, which of those 2-yard runs by Allstott did you like the best? I think it's the same game. The Bucs won big, but the Vikings had a running back. He was fast. Named Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett. Not the defensive player, Michael Bennett.
He played for the Bucs.
Yeah, he played for the Bucs. But he was fast. And I swear, in that game, he burst off between the guard and the tackle, or the guard and the center, and went 80 yards. Touchdown. Nobody could believe it, because the Bucs had one hellacious defense that year. The score didn't matter. The Bucs were up big, and they won big. But Michael Bennett scored an 80-yard touchdown. All anybody wanted to talk about after that game, including Sapp, we're supposed to have a man in the A-gap. Where was he? That can't happen. They dwelled on it, Steve. That's pride. Professional pride. And that's a little bit missing right now with these Buccaneers.
Well, it should be, because there's no reason to be proud. But you're right.
One run. That's all they could talk about.
Personal pride. Just thought, you know what? I don't care what Sapp says. I got to figure out a way to get better on the field. And it's like these guys are more worried about what's – who cares what Sapp says? You guys are about ready to lose your damn jobs.
Great story, Sage. Great piece of
That's 16 years ago.
I'll add one more about the Sapp story. These guys are worried about Sapp. Again, I'll repeat, who cares? These guys are on the cusp of living in football infamy. Sapp is nothing compared to that.
You can't get around that.
You're going to be in the record books here pretty soon.
They've been playing for darn near 100 years this game.
Going back,
here's one for you, Ira. I wrote this.
Let me go back to the Sapp video. Going back to the Sapp video, he was just diagramming that one play, Ira. And he specifically was pointing...
Justin Evans?
On Lavonte David. And he redid it like 4 times, and he used the yellow marker, almost like a telestrator kind of thing. And he explained that Lavonte David should have gone outside. He went inside, out goes, and he said like 6 times, go outside. You set up the free hitter, which was Jordan Whitehead on that play.
So no gap integrity. In. No gap integrity.
Well, no, Lavonte David should have gone outside on the guard that was coming, and instead he went inside, and the free hitter wasn't there. Bounced outside. He got around. Now, as Lee said, we have no idea if the Bucs discussed, hey, on stretch plays for this game with McCaffrey, we're going to flush him outside, everything outside, try to break through. We have no idea. And so the response from, I think, Quan first was saying, hey, he's got no idea what he's talking about. I think Lavonte said something, and these are responses. They're not calling out to Sapp, per se. They're just responding on his
although Quan did use Instagram. The acronym MF.
And then he said, Quan said something like, oh, he's like the other MFs and something like that. So, but he was singling out specifically Lavonte David on that play. So I get that you got bigger fish to fry, but if I'm going to be singled out by a Hall of Famer for making a mistake and I didn't make a mistake, that's a hard thing to just shut your mouth.
Explain yourself then. Just Instagram comments, to the best of my knowledge, unlimited. Not like Twitter,
well,
where only got so many characters.
Well, I think implying, Lee, that maybe Lawrence Sapp doesn't know what the defensive responsibilities were on that particular play.
Yeah, and I said that earlier. It's very possible. That's why I never touched it. You know, we'll touch it now because it's a big story. ESPN's on it. You know, so I will touch it. But before, I did not touch it for that very specific reason. I don't know if they had a special play where they were told, and they're just following orders, do X, Y, and Z, and Sapp doesn't know that.
I will say, you don't want to get in a pissing war with a Hall of Famer.
Sure, sure.
But with these you know, like Kwan and Levante, if I remember correctly, I don't use Instagram a whole lot. When I do use it, I'm mostly to kill time and enjoy the finer things in life, if you get my drift.
Understood.
But to the best of my knowledge, it's unlimited characters on a reply. Well, explain. Hey, he doesn't know why, because blah, 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 blah. But they're just saying, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, anybody could say that. I you know, it's they got bigger fish to fry than what Sapp's doing.
All right, Ira, there is a football game on Sunday. We'll move over to that and our award-winning predictions here. We're still tied. Lee had the Bucks last week, so he's a couple of back. And here we are, Alex Smith, Ira. You know what? Little trivia question. The last time the guy threw 9 picks in a season, 9, was 2010. Doesn't turn the ball over.
No, he doesn't.
And this defense doesn't force turnovers. He's only got 3 picks all year, and he's the cleanest quarterback in football, is what he is. And here he's coming against the dirtiest defense in football.
What a setup, Steve.
So
what a
I'm going to start. They're beat up on the O-line, but they've run for well over 100 yards about 5 times, and they've won all those games with Adrian Peterson lighting it up. And the defense is good. It's a top 10 defense for Washington. Josh Norman against Mike Evans. I can't wait to watch to see how Norman tries to get in his head. You remember how
he's done it before.
How he's done it before with Carolina. So I'm going to say this is Washington's game here. I don't believe in the Bucs, Ira. I think we're looking at 23-20 Redskins win.
You can't believe in the Bucs the way they're playing. You can't believe it. Even though Redskins are beat up, I'm looking at 42-28 Redskins. And if that happens, I think you have to wonder the Glazers, you know, will break their, you know, just when you think the Glazers, because when you think you have them figured out, they throw a curveball at you. And I always state, when people ask about the head coach, I always state the Glazers never made a coaching move mid-season. But then again, I go back to my previous comment. Just when you think you have the Glazers figured out, they throw you a curveball. So if the Bucks lose the way I think they're going to lose, I think all bets are off as far as the locker room's going to completely implode. The soap opera will be in full gear.
Wow, 42 points.
Wow.
The Skins having their top score this year is 31 against the Packers, so that would be an eye-opening.
Well,
Packers
defense is the... it's in because Lee's been talking about a historically bad defense all the podcast. Yeah. I'll be the fly in the ointment here. I think this is the Bucks' last stand. I think if they lose, the season will officially be over, and you'll see some major revisions in the lineups the rest of the way. I don't think Dirk Cutter's going to get fired the day after, but I think the season will effectively be over. That changes a lot. The Redskin offensive line is battered, absolutely battered. I think the Bucks defense, I think Pierre Paul will show up big time. I think the Buck defense will get a couple of takeaways, and I believe the Bucks will win this game 27-23. They never make it easy, but Lee, I'm on a roll. And I got the Bucks winning this game. The odds makers usually know what they're talking about. I was shocked the Bucks were favored. They are for a reason. Skins are beaten up. Bucks take advantage.
I got a question for you, Ira. I know you're ready to end this edition of your podcast. Do you recall Chuck Knoll or Vince Lombardi whining about takeaways?